Our tech guru, Jesse Feiler, joins us this morning to discuss the ins and outs of dealing with cyber continuity. What is that? Well, it includes cybersecurity, and cyber continuity is a big subject, and we will tackle it in the moments that we have here in this half hour. Jesse Feiler is an app developer and author. His most recent app is Utility Smart in the App Store. Recent books are iPad for Seniors for Dummies and Exploring Swift Playgrounds. His website is champlainarts.com, and it is always a great pleasure to welcome Jesse Feiler to our program. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Great to be here.
Very nice to have you back. So, yes, what is cyber continuity? What does that mean?
That means keeping everything running.
Okay.
It's an umbrella term.
That's not easy to do, is it? Keeping everything running?
Well, it's sort of an umbrella term that brings together cybersecurity, you know, which is mostly evildoers, you know.
Yeah.
Contingency planning, you know, floods, fire, and so forth. And another thing which I've started calling digital dexterity, which means getting around what you have. So if you have a spreadsheet on your Google Drive and you want me to have it in whatever I use, I should be able to get the spreadsheet from the Google Drive and turn it into a word processing document on Dropbox. It's just all the stuff we do all day long without even thinking about it when it works.
Okay. So is it just sort of the running of online? Our footprint, really.
Our footprint and keeping it working and not being trapped. All of these three components of cyber continuity have the ability to cause you to stop in your tracks and not be able to do something that we all think is really simple. I did it yesterday, and why can't I do it today? Because the internet is down, or because we've been hacked, or because I've never dealt with Dropbox or whatever. It's all of those things. It's just being able to do tomorrow what you can do today.
So does this necessarily mean when we're online, or can it just be in dealing with our particular operating, you know, our tools?
It's everything. It actually arose from this book I'm working on about nonprofit risk. And I looked at the technology chapter. This is the background to how this stuff happens. It's sort of messy, but it works. I looked at the technology chapter, and there were all of these separate things in it. And I said, is there some way we can put it together so it's one thing that encompasses that? And that's where cyber continuity happens.
So in some ways, it's what we perceive of that, as you say, it was working yesterday and today it doesn't seem to be. So what has gone wrong? Well, let me just show you something. I'm showing Jesse I write the script every day, right? So every day I write a script. And this is, and it's basically just in a Word document. And every day I write the script. So yesterday I go to write the script, and it's normal, has a normal page, and it's, you know, it's 196% up there because I'm blind and, you know, all that stuff. So then I go to do this yesterday, and it looks like that, which is, and for those of you who can't see this, it's just one, there's no page formatting, there's no formatting at all. It's just one spew of words going down the page.
Mm-hmm.
So is that what we're talking about?
That's like digital dexterity. How did that happen? And
how
do you get it back?
And
to
how
where
do
it
I get it back to where it was yesterday?
And basically what I was looking at when I was looking at risk is we really don't care if the document is screwed up because you did something or because you were hacked or because the internet is down. It really doesn't matter.
I just want to keep going.
Yes. You want to do what you did yesterday.
Right. All right. So if something goes wrong like this, and I assume there's a myriad of answers here, but if something goes wrong like this, who do we call? Where are we supposed
I'll
to
give think? You, I'll give you.
Or are we supposed to figure this out ourselves?
Okay. Well, there are two choices we can give people who they call.
Okay.
And you could add a third if you want.
Glad that you're very nice. Thank you.
First choice is they can call you at the station.
Yeah.
Second choice, they can call me.
Yeah.
And you may have a third choice.
figure it out yourself.
No, the third choice really is to know that this can all happen and just be ready for it and make certain that you don't take it for granted.
Okay.
Just, you know, because all these things happen. I was once called in when I was doing consulting in New York City. I was called in once to the office of a client where one of the people in the office had all the data on her computer disappear. And they asked me to get in there as soon as I could because all the data on the computer had disappeared.
Mm. Which is troubling.
It is troubling. Everyone's panicking. Everyone else had their data, but this one person's data had all disappeared. I walked in. It happened to be a Mac. It could have been a PC. I walked in and I looked at the screen. And there was a folder on the screen that said hard disk. I opened the folder. And the data was back.
Voila. Okay. All right. So you talk about the difference between contingency planning of what it is that we're going to do throughout the day. I want to do this, and this. And how that differs from cybersecurity, which will prevent me from doing this, and this.
But the end result is all the same. The end result is you can't do what you want to do.
Okay.
And the difference, if you want to look at it, the difference is cybersecurity is usually there's a bad actor or a villain or someone doing something illegally. Cyber warfare is part of that. I mean, that's the cybersecurity section. The contingency section is planning. It doesn't even have to be cyber, planning for what you do with floods or fires or whatever. And the digital dexterity looks really at how you use these things. All of them have the ability to stop you from doing what you want to do. So in planning to maintain the continuity, it's a matter of looking at all of them. But what I was trying to do in the book is to say, hey, this isn't a whole bunch of different things. It's really all the same things. It doesn't matter if you're Sony Pictures. It doesn't really matter if the contracts are exposed because the North Koreans hacked your server or for some other reason. It's happened. How do you prevent it from happening again, and how do you solve it?
So, and maybe this is just my naivete or my glass half full type cheery demeanor. But
which you're well known.
Thank you. But it just seems to me that normally when I see something go wrong, instead of thinking that I've been hacked or that something, a virus has overtaken my computer and that we're all doomed and it's the end of the world, I instead think I screwed something up. I pressed Z when I should have pressed V. That's my assumption.
That's what a lot, and that's where putting these things together makes a difference. It pays off.
Now, but percentage wise, isn't that most of the time? I mean, the chances of the hacking is probably less than you just doing something wrong.
Well, it depends on who you are.
Okay, so I'm different than, say, like the Clinton campaign.
But in all of these cases, my point is that the immediate issue is getting running again. What
okay.
do you do?
All right.
And then it may be a secondary thing, tracking down what happened. Was it hacking? Was it something going wrong? Was it user error? It doesn't matter really what it was, and often it's a combination of all of these things.
Mm.
Because it's in the Clinton campaign is an example of there was hacking going on there, but it took advantage of mistakes that were made by people with passwords.
Okay, so now I want to get into passwords because passwords play a big role in all of this. And I think the whole password thing can be just a giant mess because we are, I think, in a way to keep ourselves sane, we try to have some uniformity to our passwords. And then what happens is that we get locked out or something changes, and then we have to switch the passwords. So then you've got three for this system, yeah. You have two for that system. I don't know. What is the way that we do that to try to eradicate the scenario you were just discussing?
Well, the password issue is being solved. It's taking a long time to do it because of market factors. But the solution is biometrics. You can unlock many phones now with your finger.
Okay. But is
that
it,
takes care of it.
Is it okay that I don't know what you mean by biometrics?
if you want to interpret it as being that I can unlock my iPhone with my finger,
yes,
that's a good enough description. Then when we get to advanced biometrics, then we can say, you know how I can unlock my phone with my fingerprint? I can also unlock my other device with my iris scan with my eye, which is like a fingerprint in that it's unique.
Okay.
That's biometrics 2. We can do biometrics 3 next month.
Sounds good. Sounds good. I'm not ready to move on yet. But it is this. Now, that is getting into the device, right? That password for our fingerprint, that is to get into the device. Is that much different than getting into a particular program or website or
not
anything else?
Not at all. If I go into, because I have a couple of apps in the App Store, if I get into iTunes Connect, which is what we use to manage our assets in the App Store, I log in with my fingerprint.
Okay.
So I've logged into the device already to get into it with my fingerprint. Then I get into iTunes Connect with another with the same fingerprint.
All right. And if I want to get into my subscription to, I don't know, the Washington Post, it doesn't give me that fingerprint option. I have to have a password and know all of that stuff.
You can get into the device with your fingerprint. I don't know if you can get into iTunes. This is rolling out now. It takes a long time. It adds to the cost of the devices to put the sensors in them.
Yeah.
But it's not an enormous cost. But gradually, it's rolling out. And I don't know. My guess is, I just said to someone, I think it's going to take 10 years before we get rid of passwords.
But it'll happen.
Yeah, because if, you know, for all of the people who you can get a new device and you can use fingerprint on it to open it up. But what about people who still have old devices? You know, so it's going to gradually get out. But I think everyone agrees passwords are horrible and they are causing security breaches because people give up and put them on a post-it on the refrigerator.
Okay. But who knows that you put it on the refrigerator? I mean, other than
everyone does, don't you?
No. Well, I mean, who's looking at my refrigerator?
Where do you put your passwords?
I don't actually. But normally my device will remember it for me. And if I don't, then I ask for a new password.
Yeah, that's okay. So that's when you get the password creep, if you want to call it that. Password
yeah.
Proliferation. Then you have 14 passwords, and which one is it's so horrible. It's really this is one of the this is really unpleasant.
Okay, so when we talk about that, from what I'm getting from you then is that a lot of these problems are problems that we cause ourselves.
We may, but I think what I'm trying to say is, it doesn't matter what the cause is. The idea is,
how do you fix it?
Getting through it.
Okay. And is that harder than it needs to be? I mean, because we've set up all these security things. So when I get locked out of my account at my bank, or I get locked out of my I don't know. This seems to happen every other day where I get locked out of my iTunes and I have to go put in my security code for my credit card, which of course I think is bogus, and you never know what's going on. And so I know how to fix it. It's just, but it bothers me that I have to do that.
But the problem with that is that you're not alone. I have a couple of banking accounts for, doesn't matter what. One,
they're offshore. Just don't worry about them.
One of the banking accounts that I have has online banking, so I can go in and check the balance. And on that particular bank, which shall remain nameless, the only way I can check my bank account online is to go into the branch and say, would you look up my balance?
Right.
That's the only way I can do it, because when I go through their online banking, it's not worth it.
Now, it seems like there should be an easier way in that case. In this day and age, it seems like there should be an easier way.
Yes.
I'm going to give you a number. You tell me what this means. $445 billion a year.
That's an estimate, a rough estimate of the damage of cybersecurity.
Wow. So how do we come up with that number?
We looked it up on the internet.
Okay. All right.
But
I mean, what goes into those?
I think that's from a research study, and I have two of them on the website. I think that was an IBM-sponsored research study. How they came up with the number, I don't know.
But what goes into that? Meaning that how much damage does cybersecurity cost a year? So this is what is lost because there is some sort of problem.
And you can start making a list of what the costs are. When a system is hacked, and this has happened a number of times, reissuing credit cards, setting up new accounts.
I see.
If you have, you know, we've had millions, tens of millions of credit cards stolen by hackers. How much do you think it costs a bank or a merchant to create new accounts? There's the cost of printing the cards, you know, the postage to send out new cards, all of that. So there's a direct cost there. There are indirect costs or imaginary is pejorative. I don't mean that. There are the costs. People will say, I'm not going to use this credit card anymore. I'm not going to shop at that merchant anymore. The time it takes to answer the calls. I mean, all of these, it's an enormous, enormous cost. Somewhere on there also, I think I had the average cost of a single corruption or hacking spree. I think that was like only about
$4 million.
$4 million for one.
Only.
I mean, that's a lot of...
Yeah. Average cost per breach. So I go to this home store and their system gets corrupted or whatever, and then I was a customer there once, so then my card becomes whatever they call
they
it.
They may issue a new card.
Yes. Now, so which also becomes a pain because everything then is put into your system, and then you have to go back to the 375 places that you have it listed for auto renewal and replace it.
Yes. It's terrible.
Will we come up with something better than that?
Well, in fact, I think we are with cybersecurity. I think it's so visible now. I think we are starting to come up with something. In the tech world, when confronted with a challenge, you know what the tech world typically does? We automate things.
Oh, automate it. Okay.
And
I was going to say wait it out, but okay, no, we. We automate things.
Maybe they're two sides of the same coin.
Okay.
But we are looking at increasing cybersecurity. In many cases, the immediate thing is to throw money at it, hire people, and set up new cyber. We don't worry about cybersecurity. This business we have, you know, we just spent $10 million. We have a cybersecurity division. But it's in the long term, it's better to either say, instead of $10 million, we're spending $5 million, and everyone in the company is trained that it's their responsibility. That, to me, is the better one. And also to automate the tasks.
So in the Jesse Filer Guide to Life...
Why are you laughing?
Why would you? Because I like your world. ChamplainArts.com. If I go to that website and for your time with us this morning, you would like us to come away knowing what about cyber continuity that can help us in the future to be better cyber citizens.
Well, one of the biggest things is that all of these are related. And they're all parts of the problems. And as you say, some of it has to do with the individual. Cybersecurity gets so much attention now because there are movies about it, it's on the news
right.
and so forth. So that one of the problems is that people relax about everything else. They say, oh, well, the North Koreans are going to hack us anyway. So why should I bother? I'll put the password on the refrigerator. So it is all All of these things have to be looked at. And security is not something that happens to other people that we can't protect against. Is that somewhat coherent?
It is coherent. But there are a lot of problems. It seems to me that there are also a lot of problems. It's going back on something that I said earlier, though, that there's a problem even within the system, because they set up all of these things. And, like, for example, iTunes has these security questions, and they ask security questions. Well, to me, I have trouble answering them, and I don't know what's wrong with me. But they'll say, like, you know, what's your favorite pizza topping? Okay, I can tell you on any given day, I may have 8 different answers to that question. I have no idea what my favorite pizza topping is. I've never really thought about it that much. It seems to me they should be, because they used to ask you questions like, what's your mother's maiden name? Well, that's a concrete right. answer. What's the street that you grew up on? That's a concrete answer. What was the name of your first dog? Okay, that's a concrete answer. But now they get kind of wavy, and, you know, what's your favorite color? What's your dream car? What's your favorite sports? You know, that changes from time to time. And I have trouble with those things. And then when you start playing that game is when then the next thing you know, you're locked out of your system completely, and then you have to go file paperwork to get back in.
Well, part of the problem, of course, is that in some of these hacks, people steal. It still happens. That information, those questions and the answers, are stored in many systems in unencrypted form. So when...
In other words, on their icebox, on their refrigerator...
In effect, yes.
By the way, I can't believe I said icebox, but go ahead.
Yeah. In effect, so they
steal... Problem
of
growing up with old parents. Go ahead.
Not just the credit card number, but they steal your mother's maiden name. They steal the color of your first car. This can happen if it's stored in an unencrypted way.
Okay.
So this is one
Well,
of,
then what good is it?
That's why we're attacking it in many ways. It's considered very bad form to store this in the... challenge information in an unencrypted way. It's still being done. If you can, I have a test that I use. If you forget your password, you can contact the company or the website or whatever and get a new one. And there are
right.
two ways this generally happens. One is you say, I forgot my password. And you can get a message back that says, okay, when you registered with an email account. We can send you a temporary password to that email account.
Yes.
And they do that, and you log in, and you go. The other method is you say, I've forgotten my password, and they do some kind of challenge, like your mother's maiden car color or, you know, whatever this stuff.
Yeah.
And then they send you your password.
Right.
Which means they have stored it in an unencrypted way.
And that seems scarier. Right?
So if you can get your existing password from a website or a company or whatever, that means it's stored in an unencrypted, or they've decrypted it, or it's not as secure as when they say, we cannot help you at all, but we can give you the means to create a new password.
So the other thing, and we're just about out of time, but the other thing too is that it started out being, because we get into strength of passwords. So when you put in a password and you put in, you know, Jesse,
one capital, one
right.
special.
You know, so like Jesse 1942, and then you have, well, that's got capital J, and then the thing up, down. And then they say, oh, okay, that's not enough. That's only a moderate or a weak password. And then you just start, like, adding stuff because you want to make it stronger, which, of course, you don't remember.
Of course. So you have to write it down.
And put it on the refrigerator.
Yes.
It's a vicious cycle, Jesse. But it doesn't have to be.
No, it doesn't have to be, and it's getting better.
Okay. You can find out about all of the topics that we talked about because Jesse has kindly put some wonderful information and articles up on his website. That's ChamplainArts.com. ChamplainArts.com. Jesse does a lot of great work for us as far as doing homework, and he presents his homework to us monthly. ChamplainArts.com to find out more about cyber continuity and about what we talked about this morning. Jesse provides consulting services to small businesses and nonprofits. And again, the website, ChamplainArts.com. Jesse, I want to thank you so much for being with us. It's
good
a pleasure.
To be here.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.